Hello, and welcome to React Native Radio, episode 103. I'm your host, Nader Dabit. Today on our show, we have some engineers on the show from Product Hunt. One of them is Rado Stankov, and the other is Vlad Vladimirov. Thank you for coming on the show today, guys.
No, we are happy to be here.
Hey.
So can you give us a quick introduction to each of you, I guess, and kind of how you got into working with Product Hunt and maybe what you did before?
Yeah, so me, I'm starting because like I'm one of the oldest engineers in Product Hunt, like age-wise now. And I started at Product Hunt because the previous CTO of Product Hunt, Andreas, I worked with him in a couple of times before, and he wanted to recruit me, and I really wanted to join because I really liked the Product Hunt, like the company, because I was already like a Product Hunt user. So it was really fun for me to be like a user of something which I use, like a developer of something which I use, which is a rare opportunity. So that's how I started. Like I started almost like 4 years ago.
Nice.
One quick background, no check about me. Actually, Rado asked me if I'm interested to work in Product Hunt. Back then I was working as a iOS dev on different company, you know? And when I heard Product Hunt, initially I haven't been, you know, a heavy user back then, so I started to use it by daily basis when I started working there. And I started as an iOS developer on the mobile projects. Back before, we had only iOS, not Android, and I was on the mobile, then switched to the web, started working on React, and you know, after a couple of months, we've asked ourselves, should we go with you know, with React Native for the new mobile project, you know, the complete override of the mobile application. So yeah, pretty much that's it. That's the whole story.
Well, cool. That sounds interesting. And we talked about this for a second before we start recording, but Product Hunt has a pretty distributed team. Can you talk about how the team collaborates and like where people are located and how that has worked so far for the company as far as having a remote workforce?
Oh, yeah. Like the way the whole company is remote, like almost by accident, because historically wise, when the company started, it was just Ryan working from a Fuse Coffee in San Francisco. And then when he recruited Andreas, the previous CTO of Product Hunt, they actually haven't met each other. Like Andreas just created the Chrome extension for Product Hunt, and Ryan liked the extension so much, they actually started collaborating, and then they started working together. So they actually haven't met in person before they start working together. And Andreas is really liking the remote way of working. So pretty much the whole team was built working remotely. And the way we collaborate is we actually are like a no email policy company. Like we don't use emails. We just were so lucky that when the company started, Slack was just starting out. So we jumped on the Slack train quite early. And for the rest of the stuff, we just use like GitHub and Trello for collaborating. And of course, InVision for design collaborations. The funny thing about InVision is actually that one of the strongest things in Product Hunt is our community. And we often, for example, use InVision, which is like a tool for reviewing UI. We actually, a lot of times, we just put public InVision boards for our users to give us feedback. So the whole company is a very async and remote place.
No email. That's kind of crazy. That's kind of cool, though. So like, what happens if you send your coworker an email? Does he just ignore you?
I haven't done this in a while, to be honest. Like
me too.
The only emails we actually sent is calendar invites for meetings. But since we are like working in a very different time zones, we actually don't have that many meetings.
Oh, cool. Well. So, so no meetings, or not no meetings, but few meetings, no email. Collaboration happens through messaging channels and through Trello and GitHub issues and things like that. That sounds about right?
Yeah,
that's
and
pretty
work,
cool.
Works well for us, by the way. I was so surprised too because back then I was working in a very big company. Everything went through the mail, and when switching to the Product Hunt, I was, you know, 1 weekly call and that's it. So you have the task.
So was this a decision that was kind of like made, or was this more of like an organic thing?
So some of it was made by Andreas. The other thing is, since we are remote and we work in different positions, everybody should be full stack. Like everybody should be owning what they're doing. So we shouldn't have dependencies between each other. And that's usually why you need emails, why you need more process when you need to collaborate with multiple people. What we try to do is have like separate people. Like, for example, Vlad was the lead on the mobile app and he was like deciding everything. He didn't need to collaborate with the whole company for it.
That's interesting. And I'm kind of curious, because Product Hunt is such like a well-known team, and not a team, but like a well-known company, I guess you'd say. And the CEO is someone I follow on Twitter. Have you ever met that guy or the founder?
Andreas?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Like we met everybody. Like we are doing like 2 times a year company-wide retreats where we try to get the whole company together. Also, like depending on which project you go, sometimes we just gotta go in San Francisco. Like I was even living for 4 months there in my first year for them to just see that I'm a real person.
Very cool. That's pretty cool. How many people are there at the company? Just ballpark. Just out of curiosity.
Around 15 right now. Like we have 7 engineers, and the rest of it is like a community, sales, and support people.
So this is an interesting conversation, but let's kind of veer off now to React Native and what your experience has been in React Native. Can you give us kind of like a quick overview of the mobile application and where it was when you first started working on it, or maybe even where it was from the beginning of the company and versus where it is now and how React Native fits into all that?
The first version wasn't done by me, by the way. We had a colleague that's not working, no longer working in Product Hunt. The version was, you know, back then, pure Objective-C, only iOS, no Android. We didn't have any Android developers, no Java. And on the time when I started, it was on version 2.0 back then. Again, Objective-C, Swift even hasn't been introduced by that time. And slowly, we were moving, you know, to Swift. And it was very exhausting. And, you know, when we sit down with Ryan, we ask ourselves what we're doing with the mobile project at all. Because we have around 70% of the users worldwide are on Android, to be fair. The rest is, you know, iOS, and small percentage is just Windows, et cetera, et cetera. So we asked ourselves, should we support Android? And what we're going to do with it? Are we going to hire another people? Should we do that? Is it worth, you know, investing on spending time with new engineers, going through the whole process, rebuilding the application that currently exists with native iOS? And the answer was actually, it depends on the, you know, on the matter and on your current domain, because, you know, Product Hunt is a list of products. You're going to get one response with list of products. You're going to list them in the UI. So we're not going to do any specific, you know, sound, audio processing, stuff like that. So we dig a little bit, and the web is on React for a couple of years. You know, we were amazed from the speed, you know, and the simplicity. So we decided to try it out with React Native. This was our moonshot for this. We decided to go with that because no extra need is needed. I'm going to, you know, to start from greenfield actually project on that, see if it's going to work well enough for us. And the bonus side is actually that the whole team can contribute to the project because we're on React already. So the syntax pretty much is the same. And the other benefit actually is that we can share our code base. So some implementation logic can be shared. So there was green light on that project. And I've stopped working on the iOS stuff and started with the React Native project. But I think it took me like 6 to 8 months to finish up, you know, from zero to release, 8 months. But the initial prototype was done in a month, I think so. And you know, then we decided, should we go with the React Native So the answer was, yeah. Of course, there was some issues with React because React Native, because still it's not very mature as a technology. But overall, the speed of development was, you know, amazing.
So you're saying that the React Native application took around 6 to 8 months to ship completely, not just prototype, but the actual final product?
Yeah.
Actually, it was a bit less because, like, it took like 4 months to get to like a releasable state and 1 month to get polished. And for the last 3 months, we are like just improving it a lot.
Yeah, actually, we've added post factum a lot of new features because we had the idea to keep, you know, just the basics and to scale from there based on the user feedback. So yeah, initial phase was very fast. And then we slowly added more and more features.
Cool.
And
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just thinking that's pretty interesting.
No.
the React Native version, was that released both for iOS and Android?
Yeah. There was released, I think, on the same day. Yeah, on the same day. Maybe we shouldn't do that, but we did it.
Yeah, it was in January, I think. I think the initial project started in somewhere around November, and by the end of January, like end of January or beginning of February, we actually released the for iOS.
Initially we released the alpha version to a private group of beta testers.
So I'm kind of curious. It sounds like you were having an existing native iOS app in the App Store, and then you were building this React Native app. Were you also maintaining and adding features to the iOS app while you were building this, or did you kind of completely stop work on that app to work on the new version?
I completely stopped it because I wanted to see how easy it is to share the, you know, domain-specific UIs, like platform-specific, like for Android and iOS, and I think maybe it's a little bit, you know, it's better to, it was going to be better if I released Android first, but I go both, you know, and at least just did the native code, and it's 100% pure React Native, to be honest. I don't have a single line of, Android or Java or Swift in the code base.
So it sounds like you guys were both working on the native, or you were working on the native app and then switched to React Native and JavaScript. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like? And was it something that you enjoyed, or was it something you hated?
It was scary. Initially, I was super confused because Swift is strongly typed language. And I was very confused with JavaScript. But actually, the life cycle, the components in React Native, and the whole infrastructure of the project was pretty similar to what we have already. So it took me like a couple of weeks to get started on speed on that. And actually, the speed of development is quite impressive for React Native. You know, I'm talking UI-wise, because in my opinion, the hardest part in native iOS, from my experience, is building UI. It takes a lot of time, and you have a lot of problems on different devices. You have a lot of problems with the layout, like sizing, resizing, and stuff like that. But on the React Native, with the Flexbox, it's just awesome. It's so much easier, and you're so much faster. And I think on projects like that, this is a must, you know, for project starter. You know, to deliver speed.
So what were some of the issues and roadblocks and things like that you ran into with React Native not just coming from iOS, but really, I guess, in general?
I had a couple of big problems, actually. I had one very big performance issue, and sadly, it was in production. It was very hard to find it and to debug it because it was only on production. So it was very high CPU usage. And I debugged the project for, I think, 3 days. The issue was very simple. It was in the flat list and in the rendering footer of the flat list, actually. it creates an infinity loop. I don't know what went wrong there, but the CPU went from 30% to 200%, and it completely freezes the UI. A lot of people complained on that. I didn't find a relevant issue open on React Native GitHub, but maybe it was because of the infinity loading of the host list there. So I removed it. It was quick fix, but it took a lot of time actually to make it work. And maybe this one was the biggest issue I had in the project, to be honest. Overall, there for me the biggest problem is actually the debugging and performance optimization, to be honest, because you have good tooling for if you're on iOS or native. But when you're debugging with from the JavaScript core, you know, to the native bridge, it's very hard to find exactly where the issue is or where the wrong locations are actually. Initially, I was very, very concerned about having a lot of GIFs in the project, because this issue with the memory consumption with GIFs doesn't exist on Android, but on the iOS. Having a lot of GIFs on one on the screens actually can, you know, crash your phone. We had that problem with the native code. We wrote a library to fix that. Actually, Facebook had problems like that before. And when we started with the React Native project, this was the first thing I have researched, because if we didn't have a good library for handling GIFs, I wasn't going to with React Native, by the way, because I was 100% sure that we're going to crash on the post list. Luckily, you know, the community is getting bigger and bigger, and we have more and more packages there, so people contribute and have a lot of open source stuff. So I found, I think it was FastImage. It was FastImage that supports both Android and iOS. And it works very well, by the way. So, yeah.
So I'm kind of curious, going back to the memory consumption issue that you had, that you said went from up to 200%. So you were saying it was the infinite scroll of the flat list?
Yeah. No, because
because I've had issues as well with some of the lists issues. I think everyone has.
Yeah, I think this is a universal problem. But the we were loading more and more posts when your user reached certain threshold, right? For the footer, I've added, placeholder loading. It was, let's say Facebook-style loading of posts, you know, with the gradient animation. I found it very useful, you know, like progressive loading, something similar. And the problem is that this placeholder was added in the section footer. On the list footer, not on the section. It was section list. And every time user scrolls, I think it allocates new version and keeps the old one, keeps the pointer to the old one. So it doesn't release it. And I'm not sure if that a problem or something animation related, because there was going on some animations on the footer, but it hasn't been visible since we uploaded the content. I don't know, but the percentage of use of CPU went crazy, and this happened only on iOS. So it was twice as hard to find it, because nobody complains on Android side, and I see it on the iOS side. You don't see it on the debug. You should compile on the release. You know? And to be honest, I was so scared. Should we continue doing that in production, you know, because people start tweeting and complaining about performance, and I was, you know, kind of worried, because overall everybody expects, you know, better feeling in the application. These days, nowadays, we have very powerful devices, and we use their resources, but using 200% is kind of a little bit too much.
Yeah, totally unacceptable, actually.
Yeah. The problem was that it freezes the UI. And it doesn't matter, you know, you are adding new screens, but the post list is always, it lives on the root, you know. and it's always there. So I'm 100% sure that people are using 200% of the CPU on every single device. And people are complaining that devices are getting hot, you know, using the application. And I was, oh, that sounds like a nasty problem. And the other problem with React Native is, like, for example, if you have Fabric for iOS and Android, you know, for exception tracking, but both of Fabric doesn't do well on React Native because they don't have your JavaScript.
You don't get the JS stack traces.
So I was searching for something good enough for us. Initially, starting porting out the, porting in actual Cachelytics into the project and into the JavaScript and tracking exceptions, but it didn't work very well in my opinion. So I searched and found. Wait a second. It was Sentry.
Sentry.
Yeah, they did a marvelous job there. In my opinion, I added Sentry, and the whole installation process was pretty awesome. And finally, I had all the exceptions I needed, because I think they pulled the whole source there. Yeah, I think they pulled the bundle there, and they're showing on which one exactly where the issue is, and this helped me a lot. So maybe the debugging was the biggest problem I've had in React Native.
Yeah, I had a good experience with Sentry as well. And I think also Microsoft App Center has something that I've used. I forgot the name of it, but it does pretty good crash reporting as well. Or maybe it was the analytics. But yeah, definitely I've used Sentry in production, and I'm a big fan of it as well.
Yeah, one other good thing with Sentry is actually can it be integrated with pretty much everything. Like Vlado said, we use them for React Native, but we also use Sentry for our backend services, for our frontend services, for our server-side rendering stuff. So it's a really nice thing that we actually have a whole picture how every system we have works. And a couple of times we actually triangulated errors, which are something cost from a backend API, how it costs another exception in the frontend API, which is also like an interesting thing there.
So I'm kind of curious about when your app goes out to the users, how has the response been as far as people giving you ratings and just giving you feedback? And were you able to iterate to solve any issues that your users had?
Most of the feedback we've got for the after the pure React Native release, we've got feature requests, because we've cut a lot of the features. The previous project, it was like 4 years of support, or 3 years, I think. So 3 years we spent adding more and more features and optimizing the app. Of course, there was a lot of lessons learned, but we've decided to cut a little bit some features that people maybe don't use, or focus a little bit on the other direction. These were the main feedback that we've received on Android, because it was the first version on Android. People were very excited for Android version of Product Official, of course, because now they can comment, etc., etc. They complained on the older devices. That was that was the main problem, because I had an experience with Android before, and I've missed some stuff that pretty much are obvious for every Android developer, like supporting API versions less than 16, stuff like that. And we had some crashes on repo buttons, stuff like that. But yeah, pretty much they were very, very excited with the time the application went, started to be so much smoother and faster. And the biggest problems we had actually with the performance was from our side, not from the React Native side, because somewhere we didn't use, we switched to pure components for a lot of the components in the core base actually, And this improved a lot pure functions too. So we're right now at performance optimization phase, and still we are migrating part of our features on Graph, because we migrated from REST to GraphQL for I think a month. That's including backend writing for the GraphQL.
Oh, nice! So you guys have migrated from REST to GraphQL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were using REST, I guess, before when the iOS app was in production, and now recently or something like that, you've moved to GraphQL. Can you talk about your GraphQL implementation, like some of the tools that you're using?
Oh, yeah. So just historic-wise, like the initial iOS version was actually built on our public API. Like we still have like a public REST API. And like slowly, like internally for the web part, we actually moved to GraphQL like a year and a half ago now. Like we have our own GraphQL server. We use Ruby on Rails for the backend. So the Ruby gem we are using for the GraphQL is used by Airbnb and GitHub. So it's actually quite feature wide. And for the iOS version, we actually created like a separate GraphQL endpoint just for the mobile stuff, because this was a good opportunity for us to clean up our GraphQL API. Because when we are doing migration on the web, the way to get GraphQL quickly was to copy our REST responses and bodies and just move them to GraphQL. So a React component can get data either from REST or from GraphQL, depending like where the data comes. So part of our GraphQL API is actually not very good GraphQL API because it looks like REST responses. And for the iOS, we actually took the opportunity to get on the learnings and just build a bit more conventions there and have it a lot more focused on like, okay, have a good GraphQL API since the mobile app is Moonshot, is like in a clean slate. And also from there, we actually know what data we need.
Yeah. We're using, for the direct native part, we're using APU. I find quite useful. Before we were on Redux. So it cleaned a lot of code actually, the logic for the mutations and data, data querying new data was cleaned up a lot. I've deleted, ton of code actually, because, it actually changed the whole project structure. I was very surprised how adding one dependency, switching from REST to GraphQL, can reorganize the whole project and the way you are thinking of the project, right? It was quite different.
You probably had to rip out some state management libraries and things like that, right?
Yeah, pretty much Redux is pretty much just used for like storing some global data, like something like a global variable shared across anything. And pretty much all real app data, like domain logic, is handled by GraphQL. Also, the other nice thing with Apollo is the way we actually use, with JavaScript, we use Flowtype for type annotations. And there is a good integration between GraphQL, Apollo and Flowtype. So from our GraphQL query, so what we do is we have a component, and this component have its own GraphQL fragment. So in GraphQL, you can define this piece of data which each component needs. And from this component, you actually can generate types, and you can use those types in your prop validations and in your JavaScript validation. And the way you do the GraphQL queries is you connect all the you say, okay, I'm using these fragments from those components. I compile this BigQuery, and you get all this data. And when you pass the data down the tree, you have Flowtype annotations automatically generated from the queries, which can validate the data you are getting out from the server has this shape. So you actually pretty much don't have errors where you expect this field, but it doesn't exist. And the nice thing about generating those types, you actually integrate it with the backend. So if, for example, in the backend, I decide to remove a field, I just remove the field, write a command to generate types, and the command can tell me, no, this field is used in this fragment, in this component, this field is used in this fragment, in this component, or if nothing blows up, I can like clearly remove the field. And the other nice things about GraphQL is fields can be nullable. So you actually know if this field have like a value or it's a null. So in JavaScript, it's quite nice that you actually know, is this value there? So for example, we say, if the user has like a username, we can do this. If it doesn't have a username, like the flow just tell us handle the case of nulls.
That's awesome. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of the benefits that people in general are getting. But I like the ideas of how you're kind of using flow along with your GraphQL types to kind of make sure everything is working correctly without having to run into the bugs. You kind of get the errors handed to you before runtime and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And we are at Polyhunt, we use this component as a folder pattern, which becomes quite popular in the React world, where our components are like a folder. And in this folder, we have like the styles of the component. So in the React Native case, we have the style sheet. In the web, we just have like a CSS module. We have some assets like icons, like stuff needed for this component. We also have this fragment file, which generates the flow types definitions. So every component can be really self-managed, and you only get the data you need for this component. Like, this was a big problem with Redux when we started, because when you have like a Redux store, you have to have like a normalized data view layer, and every component has to get to the data component, and you have a lot of connected components, which improves performance, but you have a lot of connected components. And every time you need to like use a selectors to get data, and you make sure this data actually has what you need. And sometimes you load a full resource, some like a half resource, and it's kind of messy. And with GraphQL, you just have like a self-contained component. You can put it everywhere you care about.
So I'm kind of curious, because this is an issue with a lot of mobile apps that I've worked with when we're trying to implement this type of functionality. Do you handle offline use cases? For instance, if your user goes offline, do you have anything set up to where the app experience continues, you know, in somewhat of a similar fashion? Or do you kind of just say, hey, you're offline, you can't really do anything?
Yeah, we say it's offline and you cannot do anything, because like pretty much everything controlled, like, we don't have the use case. Yeah, with Apollo, you can cache some stuff in memory, but it's not very useful.
Actually,
in our case.
Actually, it's probably, let's say, time sensitive, because products are posted every day and you have Wi-Fi ranking. So if you're offline, people will add comments, will vote for products, will change the order of the products on the post list on the main window. So for me, the clear decision was initially I went with state persist with Redux, and when I've added it, actually I started asking myself, why am I adding it? You know, I've added it for to save the token, saving some state like current user state, things that actually are quite heavy to load, and they are not, changed so often. You know, you are not going to change your username so often. So it's good to catch that. So we do have persist state in the application, but we're not using it for the offline mode.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. One nice thing about Apollo itself, it has like this, like the cache it has, it's quite powerful in the sense that if, for example, you loaded a product, and you browse around and you go back to the same product, it's already in the cache. So it makes your experience quite nice.
You avoid double requests. So one way for optimization, for us, the priority, by the way, of the React Native app, the mobile app overall, and the new experience was to have, very quick application. So the speed was very, very, very important part. The first couple of experiments was actually, what's the speed of the application? Is it faster? How it can be faster? Because we are going from a list of products to the product details, and we're loading ton of data there, like comments. Actually, the full response is quite big, and time to render the UI actually is big, big images, a lot of GIFs, as I mentioned, stuff like that. So our focus was, to have that instant experience, like you're tapping on the item and it just opens, it just presents the next NextView controller. So, and that was the most important for I think for us. So initially we do a, you know, aggressive caching there, but actually with very the cache expired in a minute or less, because I wanted to get the the latest version. So I've showed the initially the cached version and updated in the background. So switching from REST to graph, actually it does this for us automatically. So I'm quite happy for that, because caching logic, writing your own cache layer always takes a lot of time, and chances to introduce bugs there is very, very, very high. And I actually trying to avoid complications, because every single one that is not needed, is another chance for issue for me. So kind of strange philosophy for me.
Well, before we start wrapping things up, is there anything that you wanted to go over that we haven't really talked about yet?
Oh, another thing that, I don't know, it may sound strange, but using SVGs in the project, by the way, is one of the best decisions we get for now. Because supporting different UIs for both platforms, Android and iOS, having different scale images is just a pure pain. So we went with the SVGs there, and they're actually in the source. So this is something that was, I love it. I love it actually.
Yeah, because on the iOS, on the Swift side, and on the iOS side native-wise, like SVGs are not so well supported in this world. I don't know how it's in Android, but in iOS, SVGs are not very popular. At least they weren't a couple of years ago, and people were using PDFs for that, which is always fine, which I always found very weird. And things like be able to share icons and let the icon set between the web and iOS and Android was quite powerful, because again, with React Native, we actually can keep our domain names of like how we name components, how the components look, what all the colors, because we basically have like a config file with all the colors we use on the web and in the mobile. So this is like a very good time saver and keeping a lot of consistency of what we have.
Actually, we do use the same paddings. We share a lot of ordering of the badges, logic of the ordering logic actually is same as in the web. So maybe in future, I don't know who have discussed that, maybe in future it would be nice to have one shared, kind of shared code base. Is it possible to do that? I've seen some experiments on, having one code base running both on React web and React Native on the mobile, but I don't think so. They are so successful at this one time, maybe in future, but sharing the logic that takes time, to implement, to unit test it, is time saver.
Yeah, so you're thinking of having like a consistent experience across native, mobile, as well as mobile web?
Yeah, we are thinking about something like, because on the web we have like a very good tool set of like components. So we are thinking of maybe mixing some stuff, like especially some components which are utility-wise, like we have a component which is like time ago component, where you give it like a date and it can give you like time ago stuff, which is just text, basically. And also like on the web, we have a lot of components which are just, we have this component called font, which is just font.txt, and it just gives you the text in our style guide. So on the Android and iOS, we can just use the same name of that component, and the other components which we use, the font component, can actually use the same thing. Like, let's say our time ago component uses font text with gray version of that text. And the logic for the time ago, how it's displayed, what's the format it's shared between the platforms, but we only replace those core components, which are like how a box looks, how a font looks and all that. But we haven't done much experimenting. This is mostly in our like heads and like wondering how to do that. For now, we just copy paste stuff and not, and see like what's the churn, like what's the churn and change rate of those components.
Interesting. If I'm pretty interested in this stuff as well, having you know, sharing the code in general across mobile web and native web, but also just the possibility of one day being able to write like a single code base that works across all these different platforms. It seems to be the dream, and I know that a lot of people are doing things around there. Would you recommend any specific library if you were kind of gonna play around with that? I know there's React Native Web, and then there's a couple of others as well, right?
To be honest, I haven't researched them. Vlado, have you?
You know, very briefly, to be honest, I saw a couple of blog posts about, you know, changing the actual components based on the environment, you know, like switching from spam to text, you know, the component depending on the environment. But pretty much that's it. I've never seen actual implementation of that. I'm maybe something that is more in my focus right now is actually React Native for macOS, you know, for desktop. That is something that I think is going to be a big, you know, it's a big change. I did a native Mac app, and it's way more different than iOS app. So React Native for desktop is something very awesome, because I think it lacks of nice, everything's on the web right now. I prefer using native applications. So we'll see what's going on there, and should, if they're going to finish with the project and actually playing around with it.
Well, I think we can go ahead now and jump to the picks. Vlad, do you have any picks today?
When you start a new project, typically you need things like a domain name, hosting, things like that. When I choose hosting, I pick mine for the options it gives. I like to know what I'm getting and set things up just how I like them. This is why for your projects, you should check out Linode. Linode servers feature native SSD storage, a 40-gigabyte network, and Intel E5 processors. That's all the power you need to run VMs under full control, or Docker containers, who doesn't love that, encrypted disks, and VPNs. Plus, they have 10 data centers across the world and add-ons like backups, Node Balancer, and Longview to help you control your server costs. They also offer block storage for your static files, and you can get started with a $20 credit if you use the code REACTNATIVE2018. That credit is good for 4 months on their 1 gigabyte server. That's a lot of time to try them out and see if they're the right fit for you. That code again is REACTNATIVE2018. Also, if you're interested in working for Linode, they're hiring. Head to linode.com/careers to see their available positions.
Later I'll start because he has better.
Yeah, so I have a couple of picks. Like one interesting pick I have is I spot this article from the Airbnb Engineering about their server-side rendering story. And it's quite fun because it's quite similar to our story. Like when we started doing React, our server-side rendering, we had like just some JavaScript tags, and we decorate them in the front end. Then we have like a node process called from a Ruby process. Then we move to like a node proxy. And it's really fun to see Airbnb doing the same. I mean, up their scale, it's like a lot bigger than ours, but it's good to see that somebody else has this deep insight of like they give a lot of like really good insights about the stuff they're doing. Also, another good article I have seen recently is called like Web Architecture 101, which explains a lot of like terms about the web, like what's a DNS, what's a CDN, what's a load balancer, cloud storage. It's a very like approachable thing, and it's really good for like to see like a big picture of everything. I paste those links.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Vlad, did you say that you wanted to go next, or that you did not have any picks? Okay,
yeah. I have one pick, and maybe it's old, but I still love it. And I think this was the way to go for me before. It's, you know, my pick actually is, you know, from Instagram migrating, adding React Native to their native applications. So I think they kind of did it on the right way. First of all, it was very safe experiment moving from WebView to React Native. But for me, if you have working existing native code, it will be awesome to start adding React Native with, you know, small pieces if you're not very experienced with React Native yet. So I had this as my pick, this Medium article. It's 6 minutes read, so it's not a lot, but they actually did a very good job, like on the performance side, how performant actually React Native is. So I think this is my pick.
Cool. I have two picks. The first one is a blog post that you've probably already seen, but if not, picking it so you can read it. It's called The Cost of JavaScript, and it was written by Eddie Osmani. He works at Google on the Chrome team, and it's almost like a primer or boot camp on JavaScript performance on the web. And I learned so much from this article. It's actually probably like the most well-written article I've ever read, down to the actual images and the way it was laid out. And it's really, really good. So I would definitely check that out. If you read anything this week, definitely try to read that if you haven't already. My second pick is a book that I've been reading. It's kind of a different than my typical read. It's called Evicted: Poverty and Profit in the American City. It really goes into depth about how people are living on the inner city and just people that are living in low income in general in the United States, and how tough it is, and some of the issues that people face on a day-to-day basis. It's actually someone kind of going in and living and hanging out and interviewing these people over the course of like a year. And I think it was like the 2017 Pulitzer Prize winner for nonfiction. And I would definitely recommend it. It's just really eye-opening, but it's also, you know, kind of like I learned a lot of things that I would not have known from reading this. So definitely, if you're interested in like a good read and also something that you can kind of take and maybe learn and maybe help out in the future by doing something, I don't know, whatever it is that you do philanthropic wise, but this is like a good book to check out.
It's in my read list.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really interesting. It's really sad, some of it though, but it's interesting. Well, I think wraps it up, guys. So thanks for coming on. And I'm in Mississippi right now, and they're 8 or 9 hours ahead of me on a Friday. So they're ready probably to go and chill for the weekend. So thanks for staying late tonight and being on the podcast.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to episode 103 of React Native Radio. We'll see everyone next week.